Haynes School's FY17 budget leans on reserves to cover a deficit. And the Kluane Chilkat bike relay set for next weekend continues to grow in popularity. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. Haynes Interim Superintendent Rich Carlson's last regular school board meeting was Tuesday night. At the meeting, the board approved an FY17 budget that draws about $290,000 from reserves. Carlson took the reins of the Haynes School District after an unexpected departure from former Superintendent Ginger Jewell. Carlson served as superintendent in Kluane for a dozen years and then retired, but interim stints in Cordova and then Haynes took him out of retirement temporarily. Carlson has faced some challenges during his year in Haynes. He picked up where Jewell left off with a conceptual agreement to house Chilkat Valley Preschool in the Haynes School building. But after concerns about the financial costs and impacts to staff and students, the school board cast an emotional vote not to house the preschool. Carlson and all other Alaska superintendents dealt with repeated problems with the new Alaska standardized tests. Ultimately, the state canceled testing this year because of those failures. Finally, Carlson worked to put district policies in place that protect transgender students from discrimination. He supported a transgender high schooler competing in the state track competition in May. At Tuesday's meeting, Carlson thanked the school board and staff.
It's been a challenging year in some aspects, but a really, really good year, and I really do feel honored.
School board president Anne-Marie Palmieri also thanked Carlson for his leadership.
Getting us back on track and just the calm, steady, hand on the rudder of our boat, so. Much appreciated.
Carlson is working this month with the new superintendent, Anthony Habra. Habra was most recently superintendent in Paw Paw, Michigan. He takes over July 1st. Although Carlson's last regular board meeting was this week, he will also be present for a non-retention hearing and a budget meeting later this month. The budget meeting will serve to make any final revisions to this year's spending plan. The budget for the upcoming school year was approved by the board Tuesday. The district anticipates a $420,000 drop in revenue. Much of that comes from an expected decrease in student enrollment of about 20 students. Carlson says they were able to trim spending in some areas to help make up for reduced revenue. A technology integration specialist job was cut, and the special education staff is being downsized through attrition. But that still leaves a $287,000 deficit. The plan is to draw that money from the district's funding reserve. That would drain the reserve to about $430,000. Carlson has said at past meetings that relying on the reserve is okay for now, but that money won't last forever.
I know I sound like a broken record, but if we would do that again in FY18, that would be the last year we could do that.
School leaders have talked about the possibility that the district might have to make more severe cuts to staff or programs in years to come. The board's next regular meeting is scheduled for August 1st. The Kluane Chilkat International Bike Relay is set to hit the highway next weekend with around 1,200 riders signed up. This year, the event filled up in a record 8 days. KHNS's Jillian Rogers has more.
The dust has barely settled from the influx of Beer Fest visitors a couple of weeks ago, but Haynes is once again bracing itself for the next big event. The bike relay is celebrating 24 years next Saturday. Cyclists from across Canada and the U.S. will saddle up in Haynes Junction and take to the seemingly unending climbs and glorious descents on the way to the finish line in Haynes. Judy Ewald is on the relay board and has done the race nearly 20 times. She says almost three-quarters of the racers are Yukoners, with many of the rest coming from across Alaska.
I think it's the fun. Anybody can do it, really. We've got people who roll their bikes out the day of the race and pump the tires up and do it. We got diehards that train hard to do it on a four, two, or solo team, really train for it. And it's just it's a family event, too. We get a lot of young kids.
The race is capped at 1,200 riders, and this year's event filled up to capacity in just over a week. Usually registration is open for a few weeks or longer before it fills up. By comparison, when the race first began in 1993, about 200 riders took part. Racers pedaled the 150-mile course in 8, 4, or 2-person teams, or by themselves. Along with the race as a whole, the solo category has seen a significant boost in interest over the last decade or so. Last year, there were 70 solo riders, and for the past 2 years, single cyclists have won the whole thing. Ewald said the race is capped mostly because of vehicle congestion on the highway. Over the last few years, race organizers have taken more precautions when it comes to controlling the backcountry traffic jams.
Some of the drivers get carried away and think, oh, I got to be up there, you know, and they drive a little recklessly.
More volunteers directing traffic and RCMP on the Canadian side are being used to control the vehicles.
Several Mounties on the road, they help us with traffic control, stopping the traffic, and any bears they deal with. We got bears sitting alongside the road. And they have in the past brought their reserves out to help us.
The relay does not maintain a waiting list for teams, but there are some last-minute spots opening up, according to the race's Facebook page. Friday, June 10th is the deadline for making online changes to team rosters.
Those who are not participating in the race, remember, there is a race going on. There'll be a lot of bicycles and traffic between about 1 and up to 8 o'clock on the Saturday of the race. They start hitting the border around 1, depending on the weather. And just remember, it's one day a year. Be careful out there.
The race starts shortly after 8 a.m. Yukon time in Haines Junction on Saturday, June 18th. In Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
17 designers and 40 models will showcase looks created by Alaska Native artists from across the state at a Native fashion show Friday in Juneau. The show is a first for Celebration, and as KTOO's Annie Bartholomew found out, it's partially a reaction to the growing appropriation of Indigenous styles by non-Native retailers.
Do we want a hint of this in there, like that?
At a kitchen table in a Douglas home, Lily Hope arranges buttons into a basketry pattern on a silky blue dress. Her auntie, Deanna Lampy, cuts fibers of cedar and wool spun together.
We've always been sewers.
Bead workers and earring makers, and been sewing buttons since I was like 9. That's the hazard of having a family that makes art.
The duo is busy crafting 3 ensembles for Celebration's first Native fashion show. The looks range from business casual to show-stopping red carpet glamour, all incorporating elements of traditional regalia, including form line, chilkat weaving, and beadwork. But as mall retailers adopt Native designs, the cultures that created them haven't been treated with respect. From clothing chains like Urban Outfitters using the Navajo name and patterns without permission, to the rise of costume headdresses at music festivals, Hope says the misuse and appropriation of Native design is one reason they're participating in the fashion show.
I would say that's part of the motivation for making these pieces, is to create an authentic fashion show from Indigenous peoples using Indigenous designs and materials to say, hey, this is how you're supposed to do it. This is the honorable way to do it. And do it right and make it pop and make them go, oh, I want that.
And the way they're doing it, they're not really respecting the tribe or the culture. They're just remaking something they've seen on TV from the 40s, which is pretty much what a lot of that stuff was, stuff that they had in black and white movies that just kind of was kind of gross, but
they didn't know any better back then, and it seems that they don't know any better now.
Do you hope these ensembles are something that your ancestors would have worn?
Not that.
Not this one.
I hope not.
You're right. I think this one's over the top. But on that note, I think that our ancestors would be like, hey, look at that. They've taken the modern fashion and indigenized it. And I bet they'd be like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Crystal Worrell is one of the designers and an organizer behind the fashion show. She says she was inspired by similar shows at the Santa Fe Indian Market.
It's actually influenced a lot of artists and a lot of young people to get into fashion, whether it be through jewelry, through textile. They're very fashion forward, and it brings a lot of attention to the concept that Indigenous people identify themselves the way they have always done it, with regalia, but now we're doing it to new mediums, applying it in different ways, this whole fresh interpretation of what it is to be Indigenous.
For her part, Worrell will be painting models with her adaptation to Tlingit body art. It combines form line, athabaskan floral patterns, and contemporary shapes from nature, like leaves and herring eggs.
Form line is about the flow, where the eye moves, the movement between thick and thin lines, and where things connect and how they flow, and the balance of positive and negative space. And just that technique is helping me apply it to working with the body.
She says it's design for the architecture of the human body. In Juno, I'm Annie Bartholomew.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.